Accession number 28625, Real 25.
You know, you've been in Northern Ireland on, I would believe, active service, so is that how it would be termed?
An active service in Northern Ireland, yeah. Uh-huh.
And coming back to Chester, what is
it? With an opportunity to reform, regroup and retrain, and you were constantly doing that, you'd be sending people on courses to allow them to be upgraded, and this is a sort of an ongoing thing. And they were then getting ready for, after a period in Chester, I think it was 1980, I left on a post then, and the regiment then went to Hema in Germany and took on an airport mobile role, working with helicopters in the castle. Chester was an area where we lived a normal life, a 5-day week, if I could thought of.
So were you back to like a 5-day week,
yes,
kind of cycle?
Yeah.
Okay. And so, you know, if they were retraining as well to go to Germany eventually with helicopters, that's quite a different kind of role they were taking.
Vastly different, yes. Uh-huh. It was an experimental exercise too, a successful one. I believe I wasn't part of it. Yes, quite different.
And see, when you'd left Northern Ireland as well, did you take all your own equipment away, you know, like all the vehicles and things that you'd used there?
No, you would leave your equipment table, which every unit has got, as I mentioned earlier, and you would hand it over to the incoming unit. And for example, we had a slight problem in that it involved three people. The ones in Chester moved to Cyprus, and we were moving into Chester, and somebody else was moving, the Royal Artillery was moving into Panathinaik. So, this Kingsland Scottish Borough we took over from, held out three units, and on occasion you'd have a slight mix-up of equipment, etc., but basically, you left your full complement of weaponry, stores and equipment in each occasion and to go for the other. Because you're mainly scaled to the same issue, as it were.
Okay. And so the type of vehicles and things that you would have received in Chester, would that have been roughly the same as you would have had in Northern Ireland, or would it have been more specialised?
No, the Northern Ireland one would have been armoured. They've been specifically for that area, that theatre. The vehicles in Chester were orthodox and didn't require any sort of special treatment.
Okay. And the area around about Chester as well, is Chester a big military area or...?
Well, it had been. It had a history. As I said, the camp contained three units at one time, and I believe particularly during the last war, World War II, it even had its own cinema, a demic building by the time we got there. But it's still being used, I believe, and it's on the outskirts of Chester. In the country, a beautiful country, and lots of nice people.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking, like, you know, for exercises and things, could you use the surrounding area, you know, like...
Not particularly. You have to move out with to other recognised areas of Northern England or Wales or whatever, if you're doing specific things.
And were you ever in any exercises down there, or was your job different from that?
I wasn't involved in exercise. I wasn't there long enough, as it were. I then moved from there to Gornbarrack in Aberdeen in, I think it was February 1980.
And were you pleased about coming back to Aberdeen?
Well, yes. I... Having served 30 years and a great deal of that with the 1st Battalion, it was a nice little reward to say that, you know, I've got 5 years to go and I could, you know, enjoy it there.
And why did they send you back? I know you're saying that you've worked 30 years. Were you going into the recruiting side or anything?
No. It was as quartermaster of their training establishment with boys, young boys, who were hoping to be infantrymen and musicians, pipers, drummers and whatever, from all of Scotland. And they were... The educational school of inspectors. We were under their jurisdiction, if it were, so it was a proper teaching establishment.
So how old would the boys have been?
They were 15 and a half upwards.
Okay. And
15.
So did that mean that your wife came back to Aberdeen as
yes,
well?
Yes, she did. Yes, mm-hmm. We moved with a family from Chester. Occupied a house within the perimeter of Gorbury, which housed all the quarter, and had the usual facilities, and also the ability to go outside and do whatever they wanted to do.
And was it a nice house within the barracks?
Yes, I had two houses, and there was one very old one nearest the back gate and looking on to the sea and to the golf course, and I was offered this lovely perk from the Colonel, which I accepted, and we enjoyed it.
And you know, you said that it was for teaching these boys from 15 and a half onwards.
Mm.
And was it like a military training you were giving them, or was it like a school kind of training?
There was we had professionals, we had lecturers, musical and academically. We had directors of music, we had pipe majors, drum majors, wonderful facilities, great teachers, and great opportunities. So that the physical side was looked after too by the PT people. Lots of games, not to say a proper school curriculum. Given all sorts of opportunities to be aware of saving their pennies or whatever they wanted to do, normal housekeeping, boys being boys, you had to look after them. And my side of things was getting them dressed properly and comfortable in a house and accommodation, and looking after the feeding side.
And were you ever involved with the boys, you know, or was it from the administration side? Were you ever, like, back there, if you like, in the classroom with them or anything?
No, all very much in the background. I would have a connection with them when I had a monthly messing meeting, when I would have representatives from each group, and we would all sit down, and I'd give them the opportunity to tell me what they wanted to eat. And I can example that to you, that we were given something like £1.50 per day per man to give them three cooked meals. And I used to think, well, if you want boiled eggs, kippers and things like that for morning, then you could be prepared to wait until they are cooked, so they're nice and fresh, etc. That never appealed to them. And I remember this day, and we had a representation from all of us. And I said, well, any complaint to this particular lad? And he said, yes. And what's wrong? Said I. And he said, oh, he said, that's no selection. It's no selection, no choice. And this lad came from the Glasgow area. And I said, well, I offer this and that the next thing. And no selection, I've no choice. I said, well, tell me, what did you get at home? And he said, tea and toast. So really, you're dealing with young laddies who, you know, mothers would perhaps appreciate this sort of situation. And you had to encourage them to, for instance, when they came to be served, I would encourage them to say please and thank you to the cook. It was amazing how this was missing. So my experience and sort of disciplined way of life was being passed on to them, whilst I encourage them to maintain standards. Well, first from there, you get it stopped being put into the sugar and all this sort of thing. So, there was a real revolution on as we trained and accepted what I was preaching. And it worked then.
And were you ever involved with inspecting them or anything? You know, like how years before you had been inspected?
No, did not you? Me, no, no. That was somebody else's responsibility. Uh-huh. We'd all sort of avenues which we kept parallel to, and at the end we culminated.
Mm-hmm. But did you never go and have a re-inspection or anything? No?
Well, I would certainly walk around and make quite sure that the rooms were being maintained. And for instance, all of the rooms, I made sure that they were always freshly painted and they weren't damaged. And we had two-tone rooms, that's the first time that ever happened, you know. And to make sure that they didn't move furniture, because as they did do, they had a history of bumping against the walls and whatever. So you had to maintain that standard, which they did do.
And why had the two-tone rooms? Was this, you know, the fashion or something?
Yes, instead of having just a plain, dull, grey, drab room, the whole lot the same. I had some very nice people that worked from the Department of the Environment with me, and phones, and art tech, and people like that. And I had to convince them that if they did this sort of thing, to upgrade the condition, that would have a reflection upon the man's behaviour and comfort and thing. So I had to prove all of this and my faith in them. And I remember going round with the clerk I worked with, we chose the different colours and it worked. People did respond to it.
So you think that maybe the different colour did make it a bit better?
Yes, more homely, more comfortable, I think.
And do you think the army was kind of encouraging that type of movement at the time as well? You know,
yes, they were. I mean, it was then we got industrial carpet on the floor, which was unheard of before. And that also added to the person taking a greater responsibility and pride in his own little portion of the room.
Okay, and how many boys would have actually been at the Gordon Barracks at that time?
Certainly 250, roughly.
Was it only the boys who were at the Gordon Barracks, or were there any...
No other unit. Mm-hmm. You had all the adult instructors, civilian and military.
And did you ever, were there ever parades or anything that you would
have? They had partner parades periodically, which everybody dressed up for, a great occasion, and you'd meet the parents, they'd be encouraged to visit now and again. And you'd leave them tea and buns for them, and bunches. So yes, it was a nice occasion for a family to... You see, they were given the opportunity to visit wherever they wished.
And at this particular time as well, were the boys still going through, like, was it a 10 or a 12-week training period, or was this a longer period that these boys were actually going through?
It's a longer period. You had the infanteers, they didn't stay quite so long, but the musicians and the piper drummers, they did. Until they were of the age where they could go and join their own unit.
And was that all Scottish units they were for, or just for Highland?
All Scottish units.
Okay.
Including the Scottish Dragoon Guard, for example, the Scottish Greys, as they were called there.
And did your job have anything to do with these other regiments as such, or were you just purely, you know, for doing the quartermaster?
I had to make sure that I provided the boys with the regimental regalia that they had. Anything appertaining to the regiment, I was concerned in.
And was that for all the regiments? You know, like, so, say someone was cap badged to the Gordon Highlanders, was that meaning that he would only get Gordon Highlander, like, dress or something?
Yeah, every every regiment had a representative as such at the Gorn Ballet. And if he came in as a Scots Greys or a Highland Angel or whatever, we had to dress him, we had to make him into exactly what his regiment wore, so that he had that foundation all the way through. So you had a massive tartan, different tartan trews and kilts and spats and headdress and badges and buttons. And yes, quite a bit of it.
It must have given you some problems at times, you know, with all the little details that go into a uniform. It must have, at times it must have proved difficult with different sizes and...
Yes. I recall when we provided the Royal Guard at Balmoral one year, the first time the boys had done this. And of course they had to be dressed in their greens and their tartans, and all being different, as I've explained, from collar badges to buttons, to buckles and tartan. And I remember that the supply organisation in England couldn't understand all the idiosyncrasies of this tartan army or whatever. And I remember getting an officer who flew up specially for it, and I took him up to Victoria Barracks in Bannatyne and showed him the thing. He was absolutely amazed, but it was of great value to him to actually see and believe in. I said, historically, this is why we're so famous. We have all these little things, and they all have significant relevance to that particular regiment. And yes, it was interesting.
Okay. And with the boys as well, you know, because you were like supplying accommodation for them as well, and you've already said, you know, how it had improved, you'd started to change the colours and get carpet and that. Mm. Did the amount of boys in a room change from what it had been originally, you know?
We four would be the maximum in any room. We would reduce that to three or two, wherever possible, and give them maximum privacy. But a three-man room was, you know, a very adequate space for an individual.
So that had changed quite a lot, hadn't it, since you had started?
Yeah.
You'd been in a big room.
Huge room. And this is very relevant now, down to single rooms where possible, with toilet facilities more nearer and more frequently.
Okay.